Jay, I'd like to direct this question to you, and it's similar to this one. Of course, one of the challenges that Dave Cole gave us yesterday was in these times, we really need to be keeping an eye on the future. So, what are some of the indicators you think that farmers and those of us that work with farmers and ranchers ought to be keeping an eye on as we move through this period of financial uncertainty?
The one area that probably hasn't been touched on that I would add, I think consumers' habits is going to be an area that's really interesting to watch as we move forward. We have a lot of millennials and Gen Xers, those between 25 and 40, that this is the first emotional crisis from a financial perspective that they've had to go through. And we have seen an immediate reaction by those folks to reduce their purchases and increase their savings. And that is going to have, because everything that agricultural produces, and we all know this, ends up at that consumer at in a form. And if that consumer is actually going to, in the long run or over the next 5 to 10 years, reduce their consumption and their spending habits, that is going to have a much bigger impact on agriculture than we probably now are thinking. Because each of our commodities are on such a close balance, and dairy right now is a perfect example of that. When we take a look at where the dairy industry is and what is driving the current crisis in that industry, it is the fact that we have moved to a 4 or a 5% plus production level in relationship to demand. From when we're in our best times, we're at 1 to 2% below that level. And if all of our commodities have to adjust 4 to 5% from a consumption perspective, then I think that is going to be one of the real drivers of the future and how long it will take agriculture to adjust to the new levels. Now, if the global crisis starts to abate, and we get some of these developing countries starting back to purchase and improve their standard of living, that may offset that. But that probably is the area that I would tend to watch and try to read about and understand, because I think that could impact all of our industries and really make this a little tougher time. Than what maybe I'm hearing expected this morning on some of our comments.
This next question I'd like to have each of you answer, and I'm going to ask Kurt to take a crack at it first. It came in earlier, and none of you talked a lot about your accounts that were in trouble, but this question, I guess, assumes that there are some of those there, and it's what percentage of those troubled accounts are in bad shape, primarily because of poor personal financial management, that is credit cards, lack of health insurance, versus poor business financial decisions? Or is that the right dichotomy to ask the question about? Kurt, you want to take first shot at that, and then we'll go to Chris and then Jay?
Sure. Can you hear me? Because there's been some static and cutting out, but I think you can probably
Loud
hear me
and
now.
clear.
Very good. This is an interesting question, because one of the problems that we have in ag lending is that right now someone asked me, what's our most difficult sector? Well, I know two people on this call that would say dairy right now, I think. And that is an interesting dichotomy here, because I think a lot of people tend to think that for some reason that these dairies have made poor poor decisions, and some of them did. They leveraged their balance sheet, they took on too much debt, and many of them just unfortunately expanded at the wrong time. But the reality of the matter is, there was an article that was posted last week, and I don't remember if it was in the Wall Street Journal or what, but there was an interesting article saying that, or a comment that said that milk prices are tied to the price of oil. Now that's kind of interesting. My point here is this. Our portfolio is, certainly we have a distressed segment of our portfolio. There is no doubt about it. It's probably outside of dairy is distributed between nurseries, livestock, and swine. In my view, less than 1% of that, in fact, I just did kind of analysis on that the other day, less than 1% of our troubled credits is the result of poor decision making, whether that be marketing, financial management, and the one thing we haven't talked today, poor succession management planning. Very, very few of those are the result of that. A lot of this is just simply the result, of things that have happened outside the agricultural industry that impacted.
Chris, do you want to take a shot at that? Troubled accounts, what's key issues?
Yeah, I would agree wholeheartedly. I think that the majority of clients we have left, and I think for in general that are left in agriculture, are good producers, for the most part manage their accounts as they should. Our portfolio, the people tend to be more highly leveraged. And if we do a 10% sensitivity analysis on them, in other words, 10% deviation in prices or expenses, it creates havoc with our customers. That's just how tightly wound they are as far as debt service goes. So I think it's more the stress we're seeing are the ones that are in dairy, the ones that are in poultry, that are the more highly leveraged customers, and also then, like I've mentioned a couple different times, the ones that are relying on non-farm income. And have either lost their jobs, one of the participants has lost their jobs, or they've been cut back in hours. So I don't think this is. I think in the 80s you could argue that some of the producers, and I'm not going to say they did it to themselves, but they did not do some things to help themselves. But I think this is a different climate.
Jay, if you can take a crack at that, and then I'd like you to move to another question right after that, and it's how can a producer hedge against rising interest rates on their operating loans? I'll give you two questions at once here.
All right. On the first question, and I won't repeat the comments that have been made, I think the one thing I would add to that is what we have seen at this point in time is the interconnectivity of agriculture to each other and the impacts of changing demands is really what's affecting some of our customers probably the most. Now, if I take timber and nursery, it's obviously the housing market, so I'm going to separate those two from this. But if I take the dairy industry or the poultry industry or the hog industry, the tremendous increase in their input cost, which in this particular case a majority of that is feed, then the fact that our grain producers are doing extremely well is having a major impact on our protein producers, because their prices, really, it's not a dip in their prices as much as it is a leveling out of their prices and a significant increase in their cost. And we did see some producers from a financial perspective lock in some high-priced corn because they thought it was going higher. And that now is having a doubling impact of them in their dairy industry is a good example, but poultry and hogs would be the same. They've locked in that feed, and so some of the numbers that we saw where feed costs were going down hasn't really been felt at our larger producers, those that really were the most progressive in utilizing hedges and other tools to lock in some of their costs. The interest rate thing is really interesting, and I think folks need to read that. Right now, nobody's worried about interest rates because you can put a 400 basis point spread on a producer and they're still having a 5% rate or less. The challenge is going to be is if these the current low prime LIBOR, 1 year ARMs, 2 year ARMs, anything that the federal government is now selling to finance their own deficits, and because they're guaranteed are extremely low. What we're going to see as this global economy starts to sift out what they want the U.S. Debt load at the government level to be, and as those rates start to increase, you're going to see a major impact on agricultural producers because of the spreads that are being put in these loans at the moment. Now, one would say, well, then get a fixed rate loan. Well, the problem is lenders now can't go out and buy that paper to make sure from an asset liability perspective that they can protect themselves. So they're putting very large spreads on those long-term loans just to make sure that they can protect themselves if they can't match fund those dollars. So that's kind of my answer on this interest rate. I think this interest rate is one that's really volatile, that's going to have a significant impact on agriculture, and I'm not real sure right now there's a good solution. Now, if you can get a fixed rate, then I would get it to lock as much debt as I could, even if it's in that 6 to 7 to 7.5 range. That may look pretty good 2 to 3 years from now. But I think this has all got to play out, and how the markets allow lenders to go in and match fund some of these loans is going to be pretty important to the answer to your question. And right now there's not a good answer.
If I could add something to that, if I could add something to that, I don't think there's, in my mind, that there's any question that interest rates are going to go up. You can't float this much government debt and expect foreign countries to buy it all. If they're not going to buy it all, it's going to be U.S. citizens that are going to be paying for that debt, and they're going to be wanting a higher interest rate, both on their deposits, and as a result of that, banks are going to be charging higher interest rates on loans. Rates are going to go up. I don't know when, but they're going to go up. So the question as to whether you can hedge interest rates with a fixed rate is, I think it's something that needs to be considered, whether you hedge, and this depends whether it's an operating or a term loan. I mean, the opportunity to get fixed rates are out there. You may not be able to lock it longer than 5 years, but they are out there. The second option is, which our bank uses, are derivative swaps. And typically only commercial banks do this, and larger commercial banks, but derivative swaps are simply an interest rate hedge where you swap your variable rate loan with someone on the other side of the market for a fixed rate. And it's no different than a commodity hedge. Yeah. Now, a swap can be transacted for as little as $1 million. It can be transacted for even less than. I've seen swap transactions for as low as $500,000. And they can be swapped out in the marketplace. They're really just a financial instrument. So that's the other opportunity. But I will admit that long-term rates, without a doubt, or in my mind, are going to be heading north.
We've had submitted many more questions that we're going to be able to deal with here today. So, and we, for those in the audience, we post those on the webpage, and we look for you to respond to them. We'll let our speakers know that they're there as well. But I'd like to close with a question. Yesterday, we had a number of ag professionals from across the country who work with the small farms audience. And so the last question, and we'll start with Chris, and I'd like all three of you to answer this, is what do you see is the differences in credit availability or application requirements between large and small enterprises?
Okay. I think there are differences. I think there are some lenders who, depending on, when I say small, I'm talking about less than $50,000. I think there are some lenders who sometimes don't even want to deal with loans that small. So I think there's a difference that way. I guess where I'd see the big difference is how highly leveraged they are. You know, whether they're small or large, at least to us, does not make that much difference. As far as that goes, I think what's important to us is how complex is the operation, and how much information are we going to need, are they going to need, in order to demonstrate this business plan I talked about before. So I'm just answering in regards to the Farm Service Agency. I don't know that there is a lot of difference other than the amount of time it might take, depending on the complexity of the operation.
Kurt. Differences between large and small.
Sure. For our bank, there is a significant difference between large and small. Typically, and I can only speak for our bank, we categorize a small borrower as someone that's borrowing typically on a overall basis somewhere under $4 million. So on a in that perspective, we generally are requiring that they be able to prepare an internally prepared financial statement either by themselves or with the help of an accountant. And tax returns are typically sufficient. And those are typically scored using a model that we develop inside the bank. It's not a true credit scoring model. It's more of a matrix. So there's far less information required to get that done. We'll go out and do a field inspection, and typically what will happen is all the requirements that you would see on a larger loan are typically waived. So there won't be as many field inspection, there won't be as many covenants. When you get into larger credits, typically $5 million and over, we're going to require CPA compiled or reviewed financial statements. We'll require probably a more detailed budget. We're certainly going to ask about succession management issues if the operator is moving along in age. And then we're going to ask what I really think is the important question is, what direction is this business headed? Are you going to be back to us for more money to vertically integrate this business or to horizontally integrate this business? And if so, how are you going to ask us to be involved? And that is the most difficult part for most growers to deal with, is to tell us where you think our banking relationship with you is going to be next year, the year down the road after that, or maybe 5 years down the road. Where is this banking relationship going to be?
And Jay, we'll give you the last word on this. And
okay.
And maybe you can, if you got any summarizing comments you'd like to give us as well.
All right, fine. I'll do that. I certainly appreciated the opportunity to be on here and visit. And I'd follow up with Kurt's, because I think Kurt did a pretty nice job of identifying those larger size producers in the agribusiness at that 4 million level. We'd probably do that at 5. We would drop down, though, when you talk about producers that maybe are having a gross income of 400,000 to 500,000. Really the traditional agricultural family farm, you have to evaluate those differently simply because the drivers of their success are different. In a lot of cases, and I use the dairy industry, they're probably growing all their feed, so they're not faced with some of those higher feed costs that some of the larger producers are. But when we would look at them, we look at them individually from their standpoint. We use the credit scoring to speed up the process, but what we're really interested in is what is that operation trying to be successful at? Can they repay the loan in a timely manner? And because in a lot of cases, those smaller operations, their profit margins are narrower. And so you really take a look at that from a different perspective, because they are the, if you take a look at Farm Credit's portfolio across the country, that is still the bread and butter of the agricultural communities that are out there, and how you deal with them is very important. Summary comments. I thought today we touched on a lot of the issues that are doing, and I thought one question that came up to Kurt that he answered that I'd like to add something to was the question about his pyramid and turning it upside down and how you do that, and some issues of how some people, you know, one of the things all of us face in our businesses. And I don't care whether you're a producer, you're a banker, or you're somebody in the middle selling goods and services each direction. We have to recognize our strengths and weaknesses. And sometimes to recognize those, we have to ask someone else what they think our strengths and weaknesses are, because then we can start to fill the holes. And if our weaknesses in our operation is financial reporting or analysis or projections, then we have to recognize as producers that we're going to have to go out and fill that gap somewhere. If it is making decisions or getting global information, then we may have to use the internet, or we may have to get somebody within our operation to help us to make sure that we get those sources in ways that we can use. None of us are good at everything, and there's nothing wrong with recognizing that you may have a weakness that makes you more of a producer than, let's say, a strictly financial manager that's sitting there running your operations. And you just got to step back and understand them, get somebody to help you really identify where your strengths and weaknesses are. And then what we see the good managers doing, once they know what they are, they get some help to fix those. And if I could sum up where I think this is going, as you take a look at how you get through these next 3 to 4 years, that could be a major key for you, because our weaknesses tend to catch us in these.
Well, thank you very much to Jay, Kurt, and Chris. It's been very informative. I really appreciate you taking the time. Thank you very much to the team that kept this technology moving behind the scenes. A quick reminder is that next Wednesday, same time, then on June the 24th, we'll be here again working down more, ever more specifically. And we have I guess it isn't here. So I invite you to go to our webpage. It's on the advertisements that came out. We want you to go there, sign up, be a part of the discussion. We really want this to be interactive. You can help us shape the future sessions. But thank you very much for participating, and we hope this was of value to you. We'll see you next Wednesday, same time. Thank you.